Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hey everybody, in this episode of the Riverdale After Show, we're breaking down Season 4, Episode 4, Chapter 62, Witness for the Prosecution. Oh boy, this is an episode. We've got Betty finding out that she's got a killer in her genes. Junkhead embraces his preppiness. Veronica tries to save her mother. And Archie becomes a vigilante. Let's break it down next.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Uh-oh. Archie's wearing a mask at night, taking round tire. Iron! Beating up bad guys right now in Riverdale. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Riverdale After Show. Breaking it. Hold on. That's my sweet jams. That I lead into to every after show here. So, I mean, I'm going to be doing a compilation, put it out on a CD, and then also go on a tour. I'll post those dates up later on my Twitter feed there so you can check that out. But, folks, welcome to the Riverdale After Show. Breaking down all the craziness that's happening on Riverdale. It airs Wednesday nights on the CW. I am Frank Moran. And once again, it is just me in the studio. But don't worry. I've also got My reliable, trusty partner in arms here. We've got Ryan in the booth.
That's me. How are we doing, Frank?
Oh, so much better knowing that you're here for me.
So much better. I'm just really excited to talk about this crazy episode.
Oh, it's a lot of bonkers stuff happened here.
We had some murder genes.
Yes. You know that is. I'm sure you've, anytime you get blood work, you've got yourself tested for serial killer genes.
That's right. I always get tested for serial killer genes. In fact, the person who knows the most about serial killer genes is the person, they're coming right next to me, but we'll introduce them later.
Ooh, I can't wait to find out. Look at that. That's what we call in the biz a tease right there. But folks, you know, like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel. The chat is up and running. Hop in there, share your thoughts about anything that happened in this episode that we're going to be talking about, or anything just Riverdale related that you just want to get off your chest. So yeah, we'll dive into the show and, you know, talk about, you know, some of the finer moments there. And, you know, we will kick it off with the serial killer genes. Let's just dive right into Betty Cooper's story here. Yes. Boom. So she decides to take Charles up on her offer to become to join the junior FBI program. And, you know, taking an extra class is no fun if you're doing it by yourself. So why not reach out to your best friend, Kevin, and have him join as well, too, which is nice that they're trying to at least, you know, they seem to that Kevin and Betty have mended fences, given what happened over the towards the end of last season, as well as over the summer and the first episode here where Kevin's alliances weren't quite sure. But now it looks like they've, now that the farm is out of the picture, we've got Betty and Kevin trying to reclaim their friendship. So Kevin says, yeah, hey, I got nothing else going on. I will join this junior FBI after school program. Also because your half brother, incredibly hot. So, and nobody knows what his deal is. Is he gay? Is he straight? That becomes a topic of conversation throughout the episode is that, yeah, Betty's realizing that I don't know much about my own brother here. What's going on here? So, but in the meantime, as they're going to start these junior FBI classes, Charles, like any good teacher, throws him right into the deep end. And that is, let's talk about serial killers. And Betty has got a knack for spotting a serial killer. Ryan, I mean, you've got an eagle eye. That's one of the things that everybody talks about.
Yes.
You here.
An eagle eye?
Yeah, an eagle eye. Yeah.
That's true. I am a bit of an Eagles fan myself.
That's right. See?
So they do call me eagle eye here.
You know, I mean, you can spot when a fishy-looking person.
Oh, I can spot a fishy-looking person from a mile away. They used to call me eagle eye in high school.
Yeah. You know, so I think you would have no problem identifying a serial killer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I see them every day on my drive to work, in fact. They're just in they're in neighboring cars that are passing by.
Well, boy, you might be going a little broader than what we think. I think, or else you're living in quite a intense area of just a lot of weird social depravity. So
that's right. Van Nuys is nuts.
So Betty then realizes, holy cow, all these serial killers, what they've got in common is the serial killer gene. So she does confirm with a doctor that she does indeed have those. I don't know. I mean, I feel like this episode, Betty kind of went off the deep end. You know, she realized that she had repressed a memory of killing her childhood cat, which we later find out, as Betty reveals more about the memory, is that it wasn't just her grabbing the cat and then killing it. It was her the cat being injured by getting hit by a car, was in pain and was dying. And as Betty went to go get her father for help, Betty's dad says, you know what, this is your cat. You got to kill it, and gives her a rock and makes her smash the cat and kill it.
Meow.
Yeah, nicely done. So, and I think Kevin's right when he says, you know what, Betty, this wasn't you exploring some kind of, you know, the depths of your soul and how it felt to take a life. Your father put you in this crazy position to kill your childhood pet. So I'm getting a little tired of Betty just really like, oh, I don't know. I think I'm a serial killer. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Especially because it's one animal that this happened to. She had never done anything else like that again. And as she keeps on telling Kevin, you know, I'm killing animals. You did one. And that was because your weirdo father, Hal, gave you that rock and kind of pushed you into doing this. So ease up on doing that. The other thing that Charles shows him is that serial killers, if you look, they do like a lot of writing, journals. They write as if they're the hero of the story. And Betty seeing examples of these journals from serial killers and all of a sudden starts freaking out and then goes back to her house and looks through a lot of her journals. And what we're seeing is a lot of pictures of like drawings of people like with decapitated bodies or severed limbs. We're seeing those kind of like those scribblings of people that are kind of deranged. And when Betty looks through all her books, I was expecting to see a cutaway shot of, yep, Betty indeed has drawings in her journals of bodies being dismembered. No, we never see anything like that at all. She just flips through the books and then puts them away. I mean, she looks exasperated, but we don't see anything in there. So, again, I also feel like Betty is, you know, jumping a little bit too far. She may have the genes, but by no means is that some sort of predetermination that you're going to become a serial killer. You're better than your genes, right, Ryan?
Right. I completely agree. You're always better than your genes. It's nature versus nurture. Half of it is your genes. The other half, you make for yourself. You make your own luck. You make your own genes.
There you go. You know, like John Connor said it best, there's no fate except for what we make for ourselves.
Yep. Yeah, we're the resistance.
That sage John Connor. So by the end of it, though, Betty realizes, hey, Charles has just told me that he's got the serial killer genes, too. And that makes me realize I really don't know anything about my own half-brother. He kind of just blew into town, was helping my it conscripted my mom to help out in this whole farm debacle, but is now staying in town afterwards under the pretense of helping FP with some police cases. But otherwise, all she knows is that, hey, he is in the FBI office. He's at Pop's Chocolate Shop, and he's wherever he lives. So Betty is starting to investigate what's going on with Charles. And all we know for sure is that at least he's listening in on our conversations. Whether that means he's a creepo or not remains to be seen. We'll see. I don't know. I mean, if you're listening into somebody's conversation, does that automatically make you a creepo, Ryan?
I think if you're listening into someone's conversation, well, there's a great film about this that I'll plug right now. It's called Three Colors Red. Okay. It's a foreign film. And they do bring up this question. I think it is a little weird. However, there are special cases where it might be all right.
Just off the top of your head, what is one special situation?
Well, I'm going to take the example from this film.
Okay.
It is like a 65-year-old man. Kids have grown up. His partner has passed away. And he's kind of just sitting at home. He's retired. And he's got nothing better to do. So what he does is he spies on his neighbors and he taps into their phone calls and he hears what they're talking about on the phone at all times. So he knows all the dirty secrets. He knows what his neighbors' wives are hiding from the neighbor husbands, what the kids are hiding from the parents. And he doesn't do anything about it. He just listens and it's his entertainment. And, you know, it is really creepy, but it's also a little innocent.
I mean, because does he act on any of that?
At one point he does.
Oh, all right.
And that's and that's where the film comes in.
Oh, gotcha.
But it was to save a life.
Oh, well, see, there you go. I mean, it may seem creepy, but the ends justify the means, right?
Yep. If sure. The ends justify the means.
Yeah. There you go.
It makes sense.
Now, Betty's beau, her boyfriend, Jughead, is still dealing with some of the shenanigans happening over at Stonewall Prep. But this episode is interesting because we do learn a little bit more about Jughead as a kid. And as a child, and still to this day, he remains a huge fan of a series of childhood novels called The Baxter Boys, which essentially is just the Hardy Boys that we know. But the Riverdale version of that is The Baxter Boys. Even going so far as Nancy Drew, which is, of course, another show on CW that actually airs after Riverdale. Their version of Nancy Drew in the Riverdale universe that hangs out with the Baxter brothers is Tracy True. So that was kind of a cool nod to the whole Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew mythos to kind of incorporate that into Riverdale. But the whole reason this comes into play is that we find out that Mr. Chitting, Jughead's teacher, has ghostwritten a new Baxter Boys novel. And they have a little reception to kind of celebrate the release of the new book. And then they also bring in the first writer ever on the Baxter Boys, who then passed down the torch to another ghostwriter and so on and so on and so on until it went to Mr. Chitting. He has come now and under the to find, I should say, the next person that's going to be the ghostwriter of the Baxter Boys series. And when Jughead finds out that this is a possibility, that in fact all writers of the Baxter Boy novels have come from Stonewall Prep, you couldn't, I mean, Jughead, a huge smile on his face. I mean, this would be the ultimate dream. You know, you already love to write, and then if you have an opportunity to write something that you have loved reading since you were a kid, that seems like a match made in heaven. But of course, Brett, you know, who already has dismissed the, you know, crime genre, especially like young adult crime genre, as, you know, just like, oh, this is trivial stuff. Who cares about it? But when he finds out that there's some competition with some award, you know, to at least, you know, how, I mean, I guess you're going to become a published author. So that's fantastic. But if you don't have an interest in that genre, but you only want it because you need to win anything that comes across your path, that feels like Brett's motivation. It's like, oh, it's something that you can win. You can be first at, you could be the best at. Well, then, of course, even I don't care about it, but I will sign up for it just because I will prove to everybody that I'm the best. So far, what we've seen for Brett, it doesn't turn out that way for Brett. He often gets shown up, whether it's Jughead or any of the other members of his little high school class.
We got a lot of people in the chat, Frank.
Lay it on me, chat.
They're queuing into what you're saying. We got Jazzy Jones saying, interesting that Jughead's grandpa was one of the writers and was the one who sent him the books. Also, Cheryl's third sibling, Julianne, is from the comics, and it's comics, and it's a comic that has to do with the Antichrist, and that's hoping that leads to some Sabrina crossover. Potentially, that's a little off topic, but one can dream of a Sabrina crossover with Riverdale.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been talked about, and I know the EP, Roberto, has said that there's going to be at least some closer ties between the two this season. I don't know if we'll ever actually get to see them cross over, which I feel like at this point, you know, I mean, Riverdale's four seasons in, it's most likely going to get a fifth season. It's already kind of established its own sort of tone. I mean, it's a nice thing that, yeah, for sure, if Sabrina was on the CW, yes, we would have already crossed over. It would have been kind of interwoven together. But now that it's on Netflix and CW, I think it's nice of them to have just some kind of little nods, maybe Easter eggs that kind of reflect on each other's shows. But I don't think we're ever going to get that kind of crossover in the way that fans would want.
Right.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that you can't just still enjoy their shows.
Totally.
Yeah. So, you know, So we get to see Jughead wanting to do this. But, of course, Brett likes to push his buttons and say that, hey, you know what? Nobody ever here that's on the admissions board has read any of your writing. You didn't get in here because you're writing. You came in here because you're just a number. You're filling a seat. You're just somebody that, you know, is an underprivileged person that they're extending a courtesy to give that poor person a shot at this Stonewall Prep. You're not going to amount to anything. So Jughead, of course, doesn't take that very well. He's doing a poor job of letting Brett get to him. Brett knows what button to push with Jughead, and he keeps doing it, and Jughead keeps falling for it. But it seems by the end of this episode, after talking to FP and realizing, all right, you may not like your father, my grandfather, but you still want me to finish school. You wanted me to do something that neither FP or their grandfather, Forsythe the First, had done, which is finish high school. So FP is adamant that, you know, you got to finish this. You got to do this. And what seals the deal, though, is that once FP says, Jughead, your grandfather gave you all these Baxter Boys books, he is looking through one of them and he sees, which is great, off of the old, for a good old crime novel, is some indentations on one of the pages that's underneath one that's been ripped out. So you're going to do the great classic scene, and I know you've done this a lot, Ryan, where you just take a pencil and you just color in on that sheet of paper to bring to light whatever is written on that page. Yeah, you got to discover that secret clue.
Just got to put it. There's nothing more frightening than the blank page. You know what I mean?
That's true. I mean, sometimes it's just you and that page, and you're staring at each other. And
sometimes I just fill it in, just because I get so scared. I just go to the next page.
Yeah, you just got to write something. And just get it out. You got to get that fear out. The hardest thing is
doodle.
Starting. Yes, do what you want. You know, write a nurse. You know, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Just type that over and over.
Even
and
with
over.
The spelling errors. Just
yes.
Keep going.
Just keep going. Don't stop. But Jughead finds an inspirational message from his grandfather that had been torn out of the book, saying, "Hey, yeah, you can do it. Don't trust few. Don't let them take anything from you." And so Jughead says, "All right, I'm going to go for this, and I'm going to win it." And by the way, don't call me Jughead anymore. Just call me Forsythe III. I'm going with that. It's all right, Ryan. As a lover of names,
right?
Jughead or Forsythe?
Forsythe. I think Forsythe, because it's almost awful with just being Forsythe, and then you're just like, oh, that's just a word. Jughead's, I feel, a little overdone. It's a, it's the go-to name for maybe a bomb. I think it's also a candy, and that's Warheads.
Yeah.
I'm going with Forsythe.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, because it's just a little weird, and that's me.
Now, if he constantly referred himself as Forsythe the Third, which, since he's the third person carrying that name, I feel like that ruins it. That ruins it. Call me Forsythe the Third.
Yeah, after two times.
No.
No.
Ryan, when you have a child, will you name, and it's a boy, I assume you're going to be passing your name.
I love the when you have
yes.
it.
I think it's about 9 months from now when your
schedule.
Baby comes.
Yeah.
Will you pass down your name to your child?
You know, oddly enough, and this might be a big reveal.
I think so.
But my name isn't Ryan.
Woof.
It's John. My middle name's Ryan.
AfterBuzz TV exclusive.
Exclusive breaking news right now. It's because that's what my parents wanted to do that with my grandfather's name, because his name's John. But that was going to be my middle name, but they said it didn't sound good. So they were like, let's make that your first name, and then we'll confuse everyone you ever meet and tell them you go by your middle name. But no, I don't know if I would name them Ryan. I think it's a joint decision with the partner, right? I think unless that's a name that's been carried down your family for years, like Henry V,
right,
or King George, or any yes. of the British royalty, quite frankly, I think then if it's something really special like that, then yeah, I think I'd consider it. However, I think you have to agree with your partner on that.
You know, you were sharing about our past, and I'll take a second just to share
open up,
mine.
Frank.
I'm going to open up right here because I can trust it. It's just me, you, and all these delightful Riverdale after show viewers.
That's right. I got to set the mood.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, we're in the trust tree. We can do this. So I am indeed a junior myself.
Really?
Yes, named after my father, and I have always resented that. Always. It's, Frank Moran Jr., it's disheartening. It's disheartening. I hate it. I hated it because people would have to call me Frankie, or they call me Frank Jr. to be able to differentiate if they're calling to me or to my dad.
Junior.
I hate the name Frank as it is. It's not a great name.
It's my grandfather's name.
Yeah, but it's just like anytime you hear the word Frank, I think of from the old show MASH.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, the Frank who was played by, what, Larry Lindell on there. Frank Burns. Oh, I was thinking he was just a Weasley dude. So it's like I've never been a huge fan. And it's like my dad, yeah, nice enough guy, but he's like, I don't know what made him think like, yep, yeah, you know, this name is so important. It needs to be passed down.
Sounds like a Frank.
No.
Frankie?
I mean, they were going to, the original thing, going to call me Scotty.
And really?
Then my dad said, pulled an audible at the last second and said, I'm going to name him after me.
Aww.
That's disappointing, guys. Oh. Disappointing.
Yikes.
Don't, as somebody who's experienced it, don't pass down your
But with hand. Riverdale, so they're passing it, they're considering it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Jughead. I mean, it's Forsythe the fourth, so he's Forsythe the third.
Forsythe.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you if you're gonna, Jughead as a child, I feel like he's going to pass it down again. He's going to be Forsythe the fourth. Oof, that doesn't sound pleasant at all.
We got a we got some more chitter from the chat.
Yes.
Does that sound, is that right? So we have people saying, you know, she is fourth. Saya, they agree. They think, you know, sometimes it's a little annoying if you're just passing down the name. It seems like we have a split chat. Some people don't think they will do that. They're going to be the external shockwave says, I was going to be a third, but my mom refused, so I'm special. You are special.
Yes.
You are special.
Props to your mom, external shockwave. Yes.
Yes. Jellybean is forced. Forsythe Ryan, yes, okay. Well, my middle name is pretty normal since it's Ashton. We have a lot of name sharing in the chat, so, you know, just comment your middle name or if you're a second or a third or a fourth, and if you the one who has the biggest number wins. So.
That's true, yes. If we get somebody that's like an eight, oh, man. Oh,
an eighth? Wow, yes. That's from, like, middle ages to now, then. Wow.
Oh, what an honor, though. A permanent... you know, you're like in the Mount Rushmore of Riverdale After Show fans right there. You mm-hmm. consider that. And there's only four slots on that. So you can see how rarefied that is. I mean, you give us a big number of your generational name, you're going right there on top.
Squad. Mount Rushmore Squad.
That's right.
If you get that name.
So we've got our boy. Can we take a second to talk about Archie Andrews? Ryan, I got to get real about Archie Andrews.
Let me pull the photo.
Look at him.
Okay.
So handsome. I mean, he's trying to do right. Now, remember, this is the fourth episode this season. First episode was a nice standalone episode that really dealt with the ramifications of Fred Andrews' death, how that was affecting Archie, and how Archie wanted to change the way that he was living his life to do better, not only for in honor of for himself, but also in honor of his dad and also for the town that he loved, which is Riverdale. So he wants to make a change. We've seen over the course of this season where he's decided to really take the boxing rink that he has now, turned it into community center, start doing activities to keep the children there late so they don't get wrangled up with any of the ne'er-do-wells that are working for Dodger, start having them run scams throughout Riverdale, doing crimes, robbing people, what have you. So...
God knows what.
What's going on there? So, I mean, it started off in just a nice kind of very solid, relatable place. Like, hey, I want to do better. I want to do better in the memory of my father. I want to make this town that he loved a better place. And now we have him in this episode. He's become a crime fighter, a nighttime vigilante. He's wearing a mask, and he's going out, and he's on patrol in the bad section of town around the community center, and he's trying to stop people that are trying to commit crimes.
Not safe, Frank.
Not safe and not very smart. Not very smart. I mean, he's going so far as to do the Christian Bale thing where he's, you know, speaking a little deeper tone.
Yeah.
So you won't know that it's Archie Andrews underneath here. I'll speak deeper.
Archie.
Yeah.
Frankly, that's not great, Frank. I don't think that's a smart move on his part. It's a little dangerous.
What is going on now? You came from such a relatable place at the beginning of the season. A son missing his father, wanting to do better. And now you have him by the fourth episode. He's wearing a mask, and he's going out trying to stop crimes. Come on, guys.
I mean, that's what Batman did after he lost his parents.
Well, that's true.
Except his mom was named Martha.
Yeah. How do you know that name?
Why did you say that name?
So, you know, It's just Archie's never filled with good ideas. And for right now, he hasn't gotten himself in a situation.
Whoops.
Arthur?
Whoa.
Yes. He hasn't gotten himself in a situation where he's gotten he's been on the short end of the stick in terms of any of these confrontations. But I feel like that time is coming. He's pushing Dodger, and we see him doing it again this episode. He confronts Dodger, threatens him. While Dodger goes to grab his gun, Archie pulls a Batman, and he disappears. You turn around, you turn back, and boom, he's gone. I feel like it's only a matter of time before he's going to be set up to where he's thinking he's stopping one bad guy and realizing that, oh, wait, this is a jump situation. There's like 10 guys waiting for me here, and then a beatdown's going to happen on Archie. So,
wow.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, that seems to be where this is going. I mean, we've already seen Dodger say, you're not going to stop me. I've got the manpower. I've also got the people. Where he's not like a man of the people. Dodger is basically extorting these people. So he doesn't really have the people. He's extorting the people. So I don't know if that's necessarily the same thing as having the hearts and souls of your constituents. I don't know. You're rolling them over for money, for protection. And so that's how you make you think that these people are going to follow you blindly because of that. Ryan?
Yeah.
You're going to become a vigilante, right?
I'm thinking about it. I think there are times where I'm looking in the mirror and I'm thinking, I'm kind of sizing up like where I put the mask. Would I go full mask? Would I just do like nose up, like around the eyes?
Kind of a little domino mask kind of thing?
Domino. Or maybe like I was going to do Rorschach, but now in the new Watchmen, that's like not a good mask to wear. That's gone. But I'm still kind of figuring it out. I know no capes from The Incredibles.
Yes.
That's the one thing they taught me. Steven's a vigilante himself, I think, in the background here. I thought about it. I think my superpower, though, is making sure we have the best Riverdale after show we got.
You know, and that's why you're the hero. You're the hero we need.
The hero we need, not the hero you deserve, but the hero you need.
That's
and
right.
I think a lot of people in the chat are also thinking, oh my goodness, people are going off in the chat right now about Archie and saying he's Wonder Dunce. That's a great name.
Yeah, it is. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, no, you can keep going. I guess Archie learned nothing from the Red Circle debacle. Archie isn't trying to be like Batman or any other superhero. If anything, he wants to protect the youth center he worked hard on. You know, interesting points. I love Archie's for standing up for the kids after the community center. So I think a lot of people are in support of his vigilanteism. I just don't know if, again, it's the safest thing to do. Sometimes a cool thing to do is not the safest thing to do.
Yeah, you know, because Archie... is visited by FP, who says, hey, I'm getting a lot of complaints from people saying that, your public urination, graffiti, things like that. And Archie's like, hey, I can guarantee you they're not doing stuff like this. And FP's advice is, hey, you know what you should do is have a clam bake, you know, which I've never been to a clam bake. I don't know if I'd want to go to a clam bake. If somebody invited me one, I think I may come up with an excuse not to attend.
Right.
But the idea is to bring everybody in, talk to them, let them get to know you. If they know you, they're more inclined to help. So Archie invites everybody over. And it's not – I feel like this is the worst execution of FP's idea. Some of the media is there as well, and it's just some of the people of the town. And it's a really odd – it's separated. They're up on like a balcony – or at least up on a landing while Archie is down lower with Reggie and Mad Dog talking to them. And Archie really just says, like, hey, this is what it is, and this is what it's going to be like, and if you don't like it, just get out of my way. I don't think this is the best way to ingratiate yourself with the people around you. He was so tactless in this presentation. Like, what part of a clan bake is it you just, you know, having people that you're inviting, trying to get to know better, have them get to know you better, just kind of stand up at away at a distance and just say, this is what it's going to be like now, guys. Cool. And if you don't like it, you know, go pound rocks. So I was like, come on, Archie. FP was saying, like, hey, bring him in. You maybe have a little cookout. Food, fun, drinks. You're chatting with people. You're just, you know, just relating on an everyday human level instead of just like, nope, you guys don't like this, and I'm trying to do something, and if you don't like it, then, you know, kick bricks. I don't know. So,
kick bricks.
Kick bricks. Yeah, kick bricks. Pound sand. I think that's what the kids say. Pound sand.
Pound sand.
So, yeah, once again, Archie, I mean, his heart's in the right place, but he does it so poorly. And I don't know why he feels the need that he has to do this alone. I've got to be the nighttime vigilante. You know, he doesn't talk to Mad Dog. He doesn't talk to Reggie. I mean, you know, I don't know how invested Reggie is in the community center per se. I mean, Reggie and he are friends. I don't know if Reggie cares enough to like, hey, I'll put myself on the line here as well to help out this community center. But regardless, it's all going to blow up in Archie's face, and it's just a matter of time. So get ready for that, folks. And you know what? The one thing that's never going to blow up in our faces, folks, is how awesome you are and how committed you are to watching all these fantastic shows here at AfterBuzz. It's not just the Riverdale After Show, though I love that you want to spend your Wednesday night here with me breaking down this episode. You want to hang out and hear Ryan's stories about his vigilante ways, his past, all these cool adventures and misadventures that he's been on. But you watch all these great shows, and we can't thank you enough for that. It gives us an opportunity and a platform to talk about the shows we love with the people who love those shows as well. But we're also asking for a little bit of help, too. So whenever you get a chance, if you can like us on Facebook, subscribe to the YouTube channel, give it a thumbs up while you're there, or give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. But no matter where you're getting involved, where you're commenting, just get involved in the conversation like you're doing tonight here on the chat. So again, folks, thank you so much for taking time out of your day/night to listen or watch one of these shows and helping us become the ESPN of TV talk. There you go.
Bon appetit.
So, rounding out our core four story, core four characters, we've got Veronica. Mm. Yes. Veronica has got dual court dates, both for mom and dad, and trying to see if she wants to keep Hiram in jail while getting Hermione, her mom, out of jail. And comes to realize through the course of the episode, it's not going to be as easy to do either of those. Because we find out that Hiram has hired a private investigator. And not just any private investigator. We find out at the end of the episode, it's his daughter. That's right, Veronica's sister, which I'm assuming half-sister. Since we've never heard mention of her before. I feel like we would have if it would have been a child with Hiram and Hermione. So Hiram has a daughter from someone else that's been out in the world that has now come up from Miami, and she's a fixer. Private investigator/fixer. And Hiram had a problem. He wanted to make sure that he got out of jail. He got acquitted for these crimes. So he called up her daughter, Hermosa. Hermosa. I don't know if that's a great name. Hermosa. All right. Yeah. I just got to think of Hermosa Beach. I'm like, okay. Hermosa Beach is coming to get me out of jail. But she bugs all these establishments, including Le Bon Nuit, and gets to hear all these conversations that Betty has had with the FBI, the federal prosecutor, and realizes that, hey, you've cooked the books. Hiram was not lying about that when you said that you cooked the books to frame him for these crimes. They couldn't get any concrete proof on Hiram, so Veronica had to make that proof, and that's how the FBI was able to actually make that conviction. So, or that arrest, I should say. So she says, hey, guess what? You know, it's busted, and it's not going to happen. Hiram's going to get free. So by the end of the episode, Hiram is free, and Hermione, as we find out, if she decides to keep pleading not guilty, more and more of her past is going to get uncovered. Things that, crimes that have happened that they haven't even gone on anybody's radar yet. So the more she keeps saying that she's not guilty, the more people are going to be inclined to be digging in and perhaps uncovering all these other misdeeds, which to that point, nobody even knows about. So the plan is, all right, Hermione just changes her plea, says, I'm guilty. And then Veronica will use the last bit of juice that she has with the governor to immediately get her pardoned. And that works, at least in this episode. So Hermione is free. She's been pardoned by the governor. And Hiram is now free. And his plan is to run for mayor. Which, Ryan, how inclined would you be to vote somebody? If somebody just got out, they've been acquitted for the charges, the crime has been a charge to them.
Right.
I'm coming out, I'm acquitted, but you know what? I'm going to run for mayor. Would you be inclined to vote for that person?
If someone had just got out of jail.
Yes.
And they're running for mayor, would I vote for them?
And they say they've been acquitted of their crimes. So charges have been dropped. He is a free person. Would you vote for him, or would you feel like, okay, you may have got away with this, but you still are a shady guy?
Well, you know, Frank, I'm glad you brought this up, because the first thing I'll say is, you know, my number one thing in a candidate is the policies. And if I agree with the policies, then everything else comes second. So that's that. And, yeah, I mean, hey, if they got acquitted for their crimes, maybe that could – then if I'm following the law, then, hey, that doesn't impact my decision on whether I would go with them. In fact, it could – if they run a campaign on maybe preventing getting arrested for – people getting arrested for crimes that they were – that they did not commit, and maybe, like, cracking down on that, I would be more inclined to vote for them even more.
You know, I mean, Hiram is a guy that's, you know, he pulled a lot of shady deals to get a bunch of land in Riverdale to build his private prison. And I feel like that was never a good deal for the city. I can't imagine that he really realistically thinks that his chances of, I mean, he's not going to, I guess, I can't believe that he would be elected mayor. But if Hiram says that he's going to run for mayor, he's not going to do that unless he feels he has a extremely good shot at becoming mayor. He's not going to just say that just to say it. He's only going to say it if he thinks he can make it happen. So I guess we have Mayor Hiram Lodge at some point in our future. Hooray.
That's right, yeah.
Hooray. So Veronica, not in a good place at the end of this episode. We'll see what happens with Hiram and Hermione now that they're free of their respective prison cells. Folks, you know what? We're going to get we're going to wrap it up here with a little bit of news.
AfterBuzz TV News.
And I want to turn your attention to a nice little article written on E! Online, which happens to talk about something that had been kind of intriguing me as I was watching this episode, especially by the end of it, where things started kind of clicking into place. And this is, they have a nice little article that came out today about the Riverdale, called Riverdale Continues to Taunt Us with Jughead's Murder. And what they go into is breaking down what they feel is now going to be the arc of this season, which is we've been now laid, the little breadcrumb has been laid in front of us in this episode that, hey, there's a Baxter Boys ghostwriter position open. And the theme that the five students there at Stonewall Prep are going to be competing for to get this ghostwriter deal is how to the perfect murder. That is the theme. You've got to write the perfect murder. And the idea is you write the first three chapters as well as a rough outline for how the rest of the book would go. And so speculation from this E! Online article is saying these flash forwards that we've been seeing through starting at the end of last season and then throughout these various episodes up until this one, including this one here at the end, is all these flash forwards are not flash forwards, but are in fact Jughead's novel being displayed on life, being displayed to us, being put to life, so to speak, that we're seeing this perfect murder that Jughead has written, and we're seeing snippets of that book, which is kind of a way for Riverdale to have its cake and eat it too. It can set up a tantalizing mystery for the season, but at the end, it's not really Jughead dead, especially after we saw him on the slab in the morgue last week. It's not really him dead. It is just the story that he's written about committing the perfect murder. So how would you folks feel about if all these flash forwards we've seen aren't really about our real-life flesh and blood Forsyth III being dead, but it is instead just visual representations of the story he's writing to become the ghostwriter of the Baxter Boys series?
Whoa.
Yeah, so it's an interesting article, and things like that were kind of popping into my head as I was watching this, and I read this article after I saw the episode, and I was like, I am in sync with a lot of what this is saying. I don't know how I feel about this. I'll be curious to see what you folks think there in the chat. Do you think it is as easy as that? That now, and if it is indeed that, does that kind of ruin the rest of the enjoyment for the season? That you're not going to really have much investment in the stakes of these flash forwards because you think like, oh, they're just sections of the story that he's writing for this Baxter Boys mystery. I'm hoping that Riverdale has another twist to this as well, because if it's just this, I feel like in episode 4, if you already know the roadmap for the rest of the season, it's going to be a long season, if that's the case. So I'm hoping that they have something else different. Let's hope that they do. Ryan, do you think that's it, or do you think they have another little card up their sleeve?
I think, you know, any stellar show like this one always has some secrets up its sleeves. You know, to think that we got all these episodes left and there's not going to be any surprises is a little naive, Frank. So I think we're definitely going to get a few surprises down the road, if not within the next couple of weeks before the holiday season fully kicks in.
Oh, that's true. You know, from Ryan's lips to the Riverdale writer's ears. Folks, that's going to do it for this episode of the Riverdale After Show. Holy cow. Ryan, we've done it again.
Once again, we crushed it.
And yes.
Remember, guys, tweet at The Only MC and let them know that the Riverdale After Show sends their regards. And you can follow me at Ryan Nilsson _. Actually, I think it's at Ryan Nilsson. I changed it. R-Y Nilsson.
Oh, why?
On Twitter.
No John in there at all?
No John in there. And also, okay, Stay tuned. Tomorrow we're starting a Star Wars news show at 4 p.m. on the Popcorn Talk Network. Tune in. Steph Sabra is on it with me.
Get out of town. Why am I just hearing about this now, Ryan?
Didn't want to throw off the show up top. Had to bring it up.
Well, now that's all I want to talk about. Cool. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Folks, as always, thanks for joining us. Like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. And thank you, everybody, for hopping in the chat, External Shockwave, and various other folks. Appreciate you taking your time out every Wednesday to join us while we're doing the Riverdale After Show. If you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. That's going to do it for this week, folks. We'll be back here next week with an all-new episode right here on AfterBuzz TV.
Founder Kevin Undergaro and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.